And can you please open your Bibles at Ruth chapters 2 and 3, because that's the passage I'm going to deal with this evening. Ruth chapter 2. Going to read from verse 1.
Did you say chapter
3? Ruth chapter 2. Ruth chapter 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favour." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to clean in the fields behind the harvesters. It turned out she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who is from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters, "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of the harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along with the girls. I've told the men not to touch you. And whether you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down on her face on the ground and exclaimed, "Why have I found such favour in your eyes that you notice me a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you did for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favour in your eyes, my lord," she said. "You've given me comfort and you have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of any of your servant girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in some wine vinegar." She sat down with the harvesters. He offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather pull out some of the stalks for her and the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. Don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field till evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to her town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought up and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the men who took notice of you." Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked to today is Boaz." "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead," she added. "This man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsman redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the girls, because someone else is filled, you might be harmed." Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvest was finished. Then she lived with her mother-in-law. One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley in the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself, put on your best clothes. Go to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place he is lying. Go there, uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, He went over to lie down at the far end of the grain power. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, lay down in the middle of the night. Something startled the man. He turned and discovered a woman lying at her feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant, Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over, since you are my kinsman redeemer." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than any you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you what I ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie down here till morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could recognize and said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you are wearing. Hold it out." When she did so, he poured in 6 measures of barley, put it on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" Then she told him everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today." Lord, I pray that what I say may be inspired by your Spirit and informed by your word. Amen. Last time I was here, I did the beginning of the story. How, when there was a famine in Israel, a farmer panicked. Even though he owned a field in the most fertile part of the country, he abandoned that farm in order to go to Moab. Not what you're supposed to do. The equivalent of there being a famine in Israel today, abandoning your farm and going to live in Egypt or Jordan instead. Not recommended and not particularly smart. He soon passed away. His sons took pagan wives. His sons passed away, leaving Naomi, the mother-in-law, stranded with just 2 daughters-in-law to look after and no breadwinner, because women couldn't get jobs in offices those days. She's forced to go back to Israel, literally with her tail between her legs. This is a stupid experiment that has gone wrong. However, the 2 daughters-in-law do have some compassion for her. And in the case of Ruth, that compassion drifts into that relationship, and that relationship drifts into covenant. She decides to go back to Israel with her mother-in-law. The other one is talked out of it when she realizes the cost of the transition, but Ruth decides to make the trip. And she says, "I will live where you live. I will be where you are. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God." And as I said at the end of the last time I preached, Ruth becomes the prototype of every messianic Gentile since. They're back, probably living on their deserted farm. The trouble is, as well as a roof over their head, they've also got to eat. How do they get their daily bread? Well, actually, in the Torah, there is a provision for this. Anybody who is genuinely poor, anyone who is genuinely an orphan or a widow, or simply destitute, can go to a field at harvest time, and they are legally allowed to, this is their equivalent of the welfare state, they're legally entitled to, first of all, go behind the harvesters and pick up any leftovers. And secondly, they are allowed to actually take unrestricted quantities from the very corners of the field. So she's actually allowed to do it. And she chooses a local farmer called Boaz, which is very providential that it's him, and goes to his field and starts to glean from the corners and follow the servants who are picking the core of the harvest and takes any stalks which are left behind so that she can take it back and they can turn it into their daily bread and they have a level of subsistence. And the farm owner and manager, Boaz, finds out what she's doing because, after all, this is a fairly public event. You know, you can't do this discreetly. And then it's a question of what his attitude is going to be. Let me demonstrate what his attitude might have been. Okay, Ruth, Moabitess, scrounger, I know what you're up to. But even though I can't stop you going to my field, these are the rules. This is the line that marks the corner. If you go over it 1 centimetre, I will take you to the magistrates for theft. And by the way, you can't use the shelter. You can't use the well. You can't use the latrine. Go a mile that way if you need to go to the toilet or you're thirsty. Don't take it from my land. I know the law says I have to have you here, but I don't really want you here. That could have been his attitude. And it would have been the attitude of many. Is it his attitude? I don't think so. His attitude is more generous. Who is this woman who is, doing her welfare rights? Who is she? Oh, she's her. Oh. Well, I know that she comes from a pagan country which had been hostile towards us, but she's only here out of loyalty to her mother-in-law. I mean, after all, I mean, she is a widow herself. I mean, not only is she entitled, but the reason why she is here is noble. Now, don't get in her way. Okay. Look, don't draw the line on the corner of the field too tightly. If she wants to go 1 centimetre the wrong side, don't leave her alone. By the way, if there are some stalks which are inside the corner, which would be easy for, well, why don't you just pick them up and throw them over to the side so that she can pick them up? And she can use the toilet. And she can use the drinking water and she can use the shelter. Yes, she can use all of those. Try and keep her here. Now, I know that farmer over there is not going to be as generous as me. Make sure she stays here. If she goes over there, she could be in difficulty. She could be in trouble. You know, I give her the bout. She seems to be a noble character. I don't want her blood on my hands. Keep her here. That was more like his attitude. He has a choice. And we have a choice with poor people. People who are genuine victims of circumstances rather than the type of professional scrounger Ruth is hardly an example of. Are we compassionate or are we legalistic and mean? And again, as with Boaz towards Ruth, the same way as Ruth towards Naomi in the previous chapter, and I think Jesus towards us, if you are compassionate to someone, it's very difficult to be compassionate to someone and not end up building a relationship with them. And that relationship could easily build into covenant. The story of the second chapter of Ruth is basically Boaz deciding to go from compassion into relationship. He is going to put Ruth the Moabitess under his wing, under his protection. And instead of calling her a pagan scrounger, and you know, she has a stupid mother-in-law who's back here in living in an abandoned farm, and this is just an example of her own folly. It's not him at all. He responds to need with compassion, and that compassion goes into relationship. I want her here so that I know that she is safe, that she's going to get enough grub. I know she's going to be protected. It's basically the story of the second chapter. Ruth comes back, having worked extremely hard, but with enough bread to bake to live. And her mother-in-law, Naomi, says, well, whose field was it? Oh, someone called Boaz. Oh, Boaz. He's a relative of our family. He's a relative of your ex-passed away husband. He's a relative of mine. Do you know that if he really wanted to, he would be legally entitled to take over our ramshackle farm and redevelop it, mind you. Marrying you would be part of the legal deal. But he could do it if he really wanted to. Maybe he would want to. What strikes me about Boaz, and I think preachers should be honest about what is actually in the text and what they're assuming. He's clearly older than Ruth. He's not a 13, 14-year-old. And in Israel at the time, people tended to marry before they were 15. He's older than her. No wife. That would be extremely unusual. I think it's more likely rather than less likely that he is a widower. But then life until the advancement of modern medicine has genuinely been ugly and short. At the time of Jesus, I read only today in a book by Simon Sharma. At the time of Jesus, one Jew in 10 died before they were 1 year old, and one Jew in 3 died before they were 10. Such was the high mortality rate. And I doubt if it would have been better in Ruth than Moses. People getting widowed at early age would not be unusual. I think it's more likely that he's a widower, honestly, than if he never married. But anyway, he is a close relative. He is entitled, if he wants to, and no other close relatives are interested, he is entitled to take over the field and redevelop it, his property, but he needs to take the wife with him. You can't have the widow's property without having the widow. Makes sense, really. So Naomi says to Ruth, well, let's put this to the test. And there is a procedure for putting it to the test. And I think this is culturally conditioned. And even though it's in the book of Ruth, I would not recommend that you advise your daughter to do what Naomi advised Ruth to do. Do not advise your daughter like this. So you're interested in this man, and because men have inferior emotional intelligence to women, he doesn't notice. Why don't you sneak into his flat before he comes back from the office? Hide in the wardrobe. When he comes home from having a pint with the lads and he hits the bed, quietly leave the wardrobe, go to the bottom of the bed, take off his bed socks, move the duvet, lie there, and when he wakes up, say to him, do you want to marry me? I strongly believe that in Essex in 2020, if your daughter did that, well, she would arrive in an institution, but that institution would be more likely to be a jail cell or a hospital ward than the institution of marriage. But that is how you did it in that age. Even though husbands picked wives, if you actually read books of Jewish culture, if you read the Mishnah, it's in the Talmud, apparently, although I can't read Hebrew, so I just what I've been told or read. This is how girls were allowed to signal their interest in boys and get round the fact that men just at times don't have emotional intelligence. Look, you couldn't force the guy to marry you, but this is how you actually showed your interest. And you actually communicated to him what you were going to do before you did it. So, you know, you'd be at the edge of his bed, you know, and you would go through this, you'd perfume yourself, you'd dress up in your right clothes, you would do this for him. Then he could decide whether he wanted to take it any further. It's actually something I personally identify with, because for 3 years, my wife was interested in me and I didn't know. As I said, with things of the heart, women know before men. It came to a head because there was one August bank holiday and she was sick. And we didn't know it was her first MS relapse at the time. But I was the only person who was around. And I fixed the broken light bulb. I went out to Tesco's. I did this and I did that. And at the end of the weekend, she was in tears. I said, Mary, why are you upset? And she said, Mark, you've looked after me so well this August bank holiday. You're my only friend who was around. You've done such a good job. I've been in love with you for 3 years. You haven't noticed. So I said some incomprehensible nonsense, and then I said, I will go away and pray and fast about this. But I went back in order to pray and fast as to how to say no sensitively. The trouble is that when you pray and fast, things tend to happen. Halfway through the two-day prayer and fast, I was in love with her. I was turning round to Fluffy Ari, my little pet cat, and I was saying to him, Ari, you're going to have two mothers for the price of one. I was cooking myself penne genovese and thinking, do I tell her over the phone? And I just thought, no, very good or very bad news should always be told face to face. I'm going to go round and see her tomorrow instead. And within 6 days, I proposed. Because we're both in our 40s. She suffered for 3 years, and this is God's will. What's the point of procrastinating? Get on with it. Marry the woman. Sometimes, well, it's a bit like my reaction to the solitude of being a writer. I mean, sometimes I feel foolish about what I don't see, but at least when I see it, I do something. This was part of what you did. You see, ultimately, if you're in Ruth's shoes, you can't decide who you're going to marry. The initiative comes from the man. You're in a frozen state. You're living in this farm. You haven't got the skills or the resources to get it back on its feet again. But your close male relatives have to get together, decide if any of them want to marry you because they get the farm with it. But you can express an interest about your preferred candidate, which is basically what Ruth is doing. And at the end of it, we see how she has done the right thing and Boaz does the right thing. Boaz's response is, well, I knew you were noble. You weren't a scrounger. You're here because you want your people to be my people. You want your God to be the God of Israel. You're motivated by the love you have towards your mother-in-law. Now, you've decided that you're interested in me. And you could have gone with someone who is trendier, and you could have gone with someone who is better looking, and you could have gone with someone younger, but you've gone for me. You've made a substantial decision. Fine. You've communicated that you're my preferred, that I'm your preferred candidate. You are my preferred candidate too. Tomorrow I'm going to ask the other relatives if they have any interest in you. There is one who is actually closer on the family tree than me, and he has first refusal. Well, I do hope that he says no. Because then I can straightforwardly have you. And that is how this chapter ends. Basic moral of the story. It's good to discern, but don't let discernment go into meanness or legalism. Yes, she was brought up as a pagan Moabitess, but Ruth did not go on that farm to scrounge. She went on that farm because she wanted her mother-in-law's people to be her people and her God to be her God. She's the prototype of Messianic Gentiles. She wanted simply to ensure that both her and her mother-in-law had enough food to eat. And instead of being judgmental, instead of being protective, instead of taking the mentality, no one gets free food from my field. Boaz's compassion goes into relationship. And at the end of chapter 3, we see that relationship take another step into a direction of covenant. And that covenant is marriage. And that marriage will take place at the conclusion of the story in the next chapter.